stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by Zach's chief equity strategist, John Blank, who also manages the large cap trader portfolio, and he's actually in the office today. So we have him live here in Chicago. And this week we're going to discuss a topic that hasn't gotten much play on the podcast, or at least we haven't done it in a long time, and that's the emerging markets. The emerging market ETF that's with the ticker EEM is busting out to new highs, but it's really gone nowhere for the last 10 years. So some technicians are noticing this breakout that it's had, and they think that there might be a new story going on with the emerging markets, that everybody has basically ignored them for 10 years, but that might be changing. So how can you play the return of the BRICS, as we call them, and the other emerging markets? Because now there's more than just the BRICS. There's quite a few more, actually, that also have interesting investment themes. So we're going to talk about that and how you can play it. And John, I just returned from a trip to Mexico City. We were just chatting about it before we started this podcast. And I saw a lot of the changes that were there happening in, you know, what is their capital city. Obviously, the population has exploded there, like it has in a lot of the big emerging market cities, like you've seen in Beijing and all of that, where people from the countryside are now moving to the cities. But I also noticed a gentrification that was happening in the city center. Their middle class is obviously growing. There were a ton of Starbucks everywhere, but of course, this, I was in like the business areas and all of that. So Starbucks has really gotten a hold on everything down there. But there was also a big Uber push. So the taxis in some of these emerging market cities, as you know, can be kind of a little dubious. And certainly in Mexico City over the years, there was talk of like being kidnapped in your taxi, having to take out money out of your ATM. That was going on for a couple of years, but that has been alleviated now with Uber. You can just call up the car and it's cheap and nice. So I noticed these changes when we're down there, and it seems like this is happening. You know, it's not just Mexico, but we're seeing it in a lot of these countries.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a famous economist I will bring your attention to. He was a motorcycle expert, and he was not as well known as Joseph Schumpeter, Creative Destruction. But this gentleman was Russian, and he had a concept called the relative backwardness. Relative backwardness. And relative backwardness is this idea that you can jump forward, and that development is about these leaps forward. Think about it as a cell phone in Africa, right? Well, you don't have to build long miles of wire anymore, right? You can just go on with it. The gentleman's name was Alexander Gershenkron.
Oh.
Alexander Gershenkron. Yeah, I don't want to throw that out. But Gershenkronian thinking is what you're talking about. You're talking about when the United States and Taiwan and Japan and Europe to some degree have developed this social media, infotech, personal computer, Wi-Fi, sell your phone, even doing this podcast with SoundCloud. These are technologies that are immediately implementable. And they can skip the copper wires. They can skip the landlines. They can move entirely forward with digital banking. And they can go forward with the most sophisticated half-sized tablets and just skip the whole development of the journey to the tablet. This is his idea. And he really believes that this push for the development, the leap forward, actually penetrates not only the economy, but the government's way of thinking. And I think Mexico is probably a classic example. I was in San Miguel a year and a half ago for Thanksgiving. And when I pulled up the newspaper on Thanksgiving Day, I found sector-driven ministers on five pages. The water minister, the energy minister, the housing minister, the conservation minister, and so on and so forth. So I think countries like this really have this because of this great leap forward, this relative backwardness, this sense that we must get forward and put a plan in place and deal with these things. And that is something you really see in these types of countries where the ministers are really development centric, right? You don't have that here. You don't have, you know, we just roll it up, state, commerce, transportation. It's sort of like functional silos. They're not right. like driving growth.
Right. They're not, they're not being, I call it kind of like rah-rahs for their area. I think of like the tourism, like Chicago has a tourism little division that controls it. And so does Illinois. Every state, I think, has their office of tourism or whatever. But down in Mexico, they have a minister of tourism.
Exactly. This is exactly it. They have the ministry of tourism.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's like a big deal. And they spend a lot of money on it, and 6% of GDP now. So they're not dumb. They know, you know, where they can create the jobs too.
Right. And this is what, you know, you were talking earlier about the cleaning of the parks and the Villa Cité, where they take the old cité and they say, oh, this is a tourist landmark with all these colonial buildings, and clean it up.
Right.
This is a relative backwardness thing where you say, we can get GDP for tourism to this level. We're here now. What do we do? What steps do we take? And we can jump. We can invest. We can make this happen. And I think that is a really great concept. When you get to the BRICS, Brazil was the B, R is Russia, India is the I, the C is China, and South Africa is S. So South Africa is actually in a recession now. They've been completely forgotten, as has all of Africa. Africa is no longer considered even appropriate. The China story is, there was a fascinating thing on PBS in Los Angeles last week. I spent 6 hours watching it. It was a Chinese story, the Chinese development story. But the one really big takeaway I took away was the whole Boxer Rebellion into the modern era and how the coastal cities and even Beijing itself have massive foreign occupations, and they really literally forced the emperor down. And the coastal cities really are so Europeanized, and they have been for 150 years. And places like Malaysia really are part of that whole diaspora. And the Chinese left China, you know, during this European colonial period. And they really do have a dichotomy in China now between the communist people who are really looking out for the farmer and the Chinese guy versus those Chinese that have somehow over the last three or four generations experienced the coastal cities of Shanghai, Hong Kong. I mean, HSBC, the bank, is the manifestation of the wealth that was created by these giant colonial cities, these possessions, you know, Macau,
right?
These types of places. And so China really is struggling to, you know, you understand the communistness because they were the people looking out for the little guy. And like you point out in Mexico City, there's this, yes, there is a middle class, but that's that coastal city thing. But then there's this giant poor infrastructure of people.
Right.
And that you can see very clearly why the Communist Party has made and will make a statement in China for some time to come. And so China, you know, the play there is effectively the internet companies right now, as we've talked earlier.
Yeah, let's talk about those. You know, that would be names like Baidu, right?
Baidu, YY, Tencent, Alibaba, you know, JD. These are names. The thing about China right now and Chinese stocks in general is, you don't have to be a genius. Buy the large cap names, right? The big
true.
Footprints, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what you want to do. The other thing I tell you about Chinese stocks is, given the amount of speculation, people always talk about Chinese stocks and Chinese people. And one Chinese friend of mine here who used to work at the Merck, he used to say, Chinese people will buy anything that's moving, right? Which means, and that's true. You can buy, I've picked up YY for large cap traders, move 34%. So what you do is you just sell it way sooner than you thought. And just book profits. Buying the growth story on Chinese stocks is not as effective as just, if it's moving and it's large cap, then buy it and sell it in a few months. It's just
so buy
kinda,
and hold is out.
I really
China.
Think buying and hold is out okay. for China because there's too much shorting. There's too little security around the financial regulation of things. And there's just too many unknowns that from what is driving those stocks internally to China that unless you speak Chinese, you don't understand. So the point I would make with you is play them when they're moving and get out of them before they change their movement. Yeah, and just look for a return and okay. You know, make your 20-30% and move on.
Okay, that's good. That's good advice. What about the R's in the BRICS, Russia?
Russia.
I mean, they're in the news all the time now, but you don't really think about the investing opportunities over there. But you did bring up one name that was interesting to me with Yandex, which is like the Google of Russia, they originally called it. But you mentioned, and I hadn't heard this story, and I had to go look, that Uber has partnered with Yandex because Yandex ran this Yandex taxi over in Russia and in some of the former Russian or Soviet countries, like the stands, I like to call them, and some of those in Central Asia. So Yandex Taxi and Uber are joining up to make like a joint company using their similar technology. I guess Yandex is still going to be majority owner of it, but Uber, it's a way for them to get in there without having to endure the competition of going up against these homegrown type companies. They're putting in $225 million and Yandex is putting in $100 million. And then they're going to share whatever goes on over there. So I feel like this Yandex could be an interesting way to play Russia. But is this a similar kind of play as the Chinese, like I get in while it's going up and take my profits? It's not a long-term hold, or how is the Russia look to you?
You know, the thing about Yandex is that the Russian infrastructure for the internet, there's just a whole lot less of them. I think Yandex probably is a good long-term hold because it's such a story stock. It has such a, you know, 75% market share. And it's got a diversified play into this taxi space. And then this gets to this Alexander Gershon spot. They are the champion. They have been anointed,
mm-hmm.
right? The government is going to drive them. This idea of a national champion, that we will allocate that market to our player, particularly in the Russian context, I think protectionism and protecting sectors, the oil sector, the energy sector, the internet sector, and the internet the tech sector in general in Russia, they must feel they must support and protect. And so that the other point with, you know, there's another name we'll throw out there, Kiwi, which is like, you know, e-payments. These types of stocks,
yeah,
aren't many of them. But again, I would say any technical topping behavior on these types of stocks is time to go.
Okay, Kiwi's ticker is QIWI.
Right.
They're actually headquartered in Cyprus, not surprising.
No, and by the way, Yandex is in the Netherlands.
Yeah. So they most got of some these, interesting areas.
Right. And by the way, the guy who ran the founder of Yandex is gone because he was poisoned.
Oh, okay. So that's always pleasant.
Isn't that nice?
Well, those are the risks you take with emerging markets for sure.
Yeah. Let's not finger over. You know, the guy we were talking earlier, there was a guy named, for those of you who don't know the history of the BRICS acronym, there is actually a history around the acronym itself. A gentleman by the name of Jim O'Neill, who was the primary guy at the top of Goldman Sachs International in London, coined this term. And not surprisingly, he left, you know, a few years ago. I'm talking 3 or 4 years ago, retired based on, you know, the notoriety of this idea. But in fact, he took out the political support for it too, and I think rightly so, because it's an erroneous idea to lump all these countries together. They are and have been. Brazil, we haven't talked about yet, but Brazil has certainly been, from a macroeconomic perspective, on its own trajectory for some time now. And the corruption patterns there, and again, yeah, the state champion patterns, where you've got, you know, BRF, the big guy, you've got Petrobras,
right,
you've got all these champions, right, where you hive, yeah, off. And the problem with champions is you can have the
corruption,
top structure and corruption. And
yeah,
you're seeing that in South Korea with Samsung. These ideas of catching up.
Yeah.
That Gershon-Kronian idea is really powerful. Catching up, allocating it out, making it a national champion, carving a footprint, the,
yeah,
Ministry of Culture in Mexico, whatever it is. These are the ideas that you have to realize are much more powerful than some acronym that aggregates half the world's populations, not in Europe and the United States.
I had a hard time finding anything to invest in Brazil, to be honest. I feel like unless I did a whole Brazilian ETF, where then I'm getting a whole bunch of names, but there was no single company that really stood out to me that I felt like I must own there, like there is even in Russia or China.
I throw on it. You ever heard of Arco, which is Arco? It's Brazilian McDonald's.
Yeah, that's right. They own all those chains.
Yeah.
They own the franchises down there.
Yeah, it's a good name to know about.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a well, at least when I followed it not too long ago, it was at a decent price. I'd have to follow it, Fiat, figure it out. But if you like a consumer play for Brazil, there, that's a good one to know. But this takes us to India. We haven't talked about India. India is, you know, been, you know, you get your any economist brochure, or pamphlet, or whatever, you're going to get this story that India is doing 7.5% growth.
Yeah, it's outperforming
the hot one. And so this, and you're going to get anyone in a story stock is going to buy the Indian ETF, the small cap Indian ETF in particular. And what's happened, though, and this is must be careful about, is, again, the speculators go in these markets and they play this momentum on you. And they get 25 price earnings ratios on even the large cap stocks in India. They're overpriced. What I'm saying is they're overpriced. Indian stocks are overpriced.
Okay, so no deals there. Even though, you know, they're deregulating and all that, it's priced in all of that.
Exactly.
The hope is priced in. Okay. Well, that's one to watch because I know a lot of people are interested in India. So we'll keep an eye on that. And what about some of these that aren't included in the BRICS, but are still emerging markets? You and I were talking about Mercado Libre. I've talked about them before. They're basically the Amazon of South America, South and Latin America. I think they're Argentinian, actually. The ticker is MELI, and they just had another really good quarter as well. But they are facing some competition from Amazon itself because Amazon has recently gone into Mexico. They launched like next day delivery there. So Mercado had to match that. So they're offering free delivery in both Mexico and Brazil now to compete. But it doesn't seem to be impacting overall sales. Sales actually increase in both those countries once they offered the free delivery. So they've been around a number of years. I feel like they do have a brand down there. And they're supposed to grow earnings almost 55% this year. Oh, no, that's sales. Sales 55%, and then maybe another 30 to 40% next year. The estimates were cut after this quarter, though, because I think the analysts got a little too excited about what might be going on down there. But they're not cheap either. PE is like 68. Almost 70 times. So you're not getting anything of a real bargain with them. But what do you think of these plays on the whole Latin American type of growing middle class, like with what's happening in Colombia outside of Venezuela and that issue? But Colombia seems to be, you know, kind of hitting its stride. Mexico has been busting out much more with its growing middle class there. And if Brazil could get its act together, could see quite a bit of, you know, opportunities down there.
Yeah, you know, we were talking earlier about the hidden Warren Buffett emerging markets play. And that sort of gets to this growth idea outside that's generally, you know, we always get the GDP growth number, but what's growing inside that that's keeping the growth number higher than anywhere else? And what it one of the very 2X, 3X, GDP growth areas is airplane transportation and airfields and air cargo and air passengers, both commercial and tourism and whatnot. Think about it in the Indonesian context, right? Where here's one, another story area of growth, hundreds of islands, they're building airports everywhere. People want to fly from one island to the other, whether it's for business or leisure. In general, that's why Buffett picked up Precision Cast Parts, which is making aircraft parts for who cares.
So that's an emerging market play, basically.
Right, because you get it. It's a 2X, 3X growth throw. Are you looking for the growth? I mean, people want to buy the growth in these areas, but the truth is then you have to look for something that is driving that in a sub-GDP accounting context. Airplanes, air leasing, we've talked a lot about these air leasing companies. These are plays that are effectively closet emerging marketplace.
Yeah, a couple of those air leasing companies you can invest in. I had to look up some of those. So there's Air Lease Corporation, that ticker is AL. They have a $4 billion market cap, so they're not real huge, but they sell to a lot of the, or they lease out to a lot of the airlines you might think would need to be leasing their planes, like Air Tahiti, the Cayman Airlines, like these smaller airlines, like as you just said, that are going from island to island. they might not have the ability to actually buy their planes outright or don't want to. So they're just leasing them from these companies. So they have 288 aircraft and 88 customers. It's a lot bigger market than you think. And then there's Aircastle, ticker AYR. They have 203 aircraft and 71 customers. And they actually are a little unique because they're exiting the cargo market. They're just going to focus on commercial. And then there's AerCap, which does cargo and commercial. They seem to be the biggest. They have 200 customers worldwide. Their ticker is AER. And all these stocks are actually pretty cheap here. So I'm not surprised that Buffett is kind of looking around in this airplane, airline area. Air leases, forward P is 12. The Aircastle is trading around 10 times. And then AerCap is the cheapest of all at like 8.4 times. And they're all expected to kind of bounce off the growth from this year into next year with double-digit earnings growth for next year. So yeah, I kind of like this area of the air leasing, and it is a way to get into a lot of these countries, and especially on the emerging market side, where this middle class is growing, and they need the airplanes.
Yeah, well, that goes to show you that, you know, Jim O'Neill has given us five countries, and AerCap and Aircastle are doing 81 and 200 countries.
Yeah.
This is the world.
Yeah.
These are lots of little bits and pieces, and you have to get around to them.
Right.
And the thing that, you know, if you want to figure out what's, again, a leap forward, that's air travel.
Yeah.
Right. That's going into the air for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it grows. I mean, you just got to think about how to leap forward. What would I want to do if I'm in a little house in Fiji? Well, I'm going to do solar,
right,
you know,
right.
Solar.
Yeah.
And then you get panels like you wouldn't believe in a place like that. You can't think the way like they're going to catch up. No, they're going to leap forward.
Yeah. Another way you can play the airline growth is through the airports. There's not many that are publicly traded, but there are some secret ones down in Mexico you can buy if you're interested in the Mexican growth. One of my favorite down there is just called ASUR. That's its shortened name. The ticker is ASR, but they actually own the Cancun airport and then eight other Mexican airports. So what they did down there, so that they didn't have just one entity controlling all of the airports, they split it into regionals, and they gave each of these smaller companies one of the big name ones. So if you got Cancun, you didn't get Cabo. Like Cabo's the other airline or the other airport company that owns that one. And so they each got like these hub names and then these smaller airports, so they can make a lot of money off the hub name. But the thing I do like about ASUR is that they have bought a part ownership in the San Juan, Puerto Rico airport, which is also a big hub for the Caribbean. Almost every flight that goes to a lot of those smaller airports, if you're going to, you know, Dominica or any of these other smaller islands, it goes from that San Juan airport. So both are seeing, you know, a lot of growth in both Mexico and, for the reasons you just stated, down in the Caribbean as well. So that's kind of why I like ASUR, because they play outside of Mexico as well. But yeah, you can check out some of those Mexican airports. I don't believe any of the other airports, they're usually, you know, locally owned, government owned entities at the others. Like you can't buy O'Hare Airport here in the States or anything. But if you wanted to play the Mexican growth story, I do like the airport stocks over there.
Yeah. The Mexico's a great example of what makes Mexico different in Latin America. Again, in the Latin American context, there was a gentleman who was a development economist. He worked for the UNDP, the United Nations Development Program, Raul Prebisch. And he was into this concept you probably heard of called import substitution. Like basically don't buy it from the U.S., make it here. And that started this national champion thing, and that created all these monopolies, and which created all this corruption. And he was basically wrong, because the way you fought back is to screw yourself up into these anti-competitive frameworks with that strengthen the corruption of the government, getting rid of it. Mexico is on the cutting edge of believing in salient ways that competition is their way forward. And right now you see that with Pemex, right?
Yeah.
The gas stations are finally, they're welcoming
yeah
the idea that Pemex will challenge
They're going to let other service stations open up.
The basic concept that has come to pass in Mexico and not in Brazil and all these other countries is they are really sincerely believing in it. They're, as you've talking about the airports, they are breaking things up. They are believing in five and six players in industries, not one. And they believe that the Mexican firms can then compete. And that is the new news of Mexico.
Yeah.
And I'd say new news in the sense of the last 10 years.
Yeah. It's exciting, some of the stuff that's going on down there. I'm also...
The word is competition.
Right. I'm also a big fan of Colombia, and I feel like they are kind of heading in that same direction, too. So we'll see. But there's a lot of interesting things going on in the emerging markets, like I said, and I feel like investors need to be paying attention. That chart of the ETF is showing the breakout. A lot of the technicians are noticing, and usually it takes a little while for investors to kind of follow suit, especially when you've been burned over the last 10 years of these stocks going nowhere for the most part over that length of time. So, and I certainly in certain countries, like with China, a lot of those reverse merger stocks, they went bust even. So people have these, you know, their former views of what's went on in the past, and they've been burned in the past. But this is definitely an area investors should look at. So if you're interested in that ETF, again, the ticker with just owning the ETF, which has a lot of Chinese stocks in its top 10 holdings, actually, so it seemed weighted a little bit more towards China, is EEM. And then we talked about a lot of other stocks here today. So Yandex is YNDX. Mercado Libre is MELI. The Kiwi is QIWI. You can go for Baidu is BIDU. Obviously, Baba is Alibaba. JD.com is JD. Some of the air transportation leasing companies, Air Lease is AL. Air Castle is AYR. And then we had Air Cap at AER. And then we also had the Mexican airports, ASUR, ASR. So there's a lot of investing ideas, and we'll be checking in again on this topic because I don't think this is the last time we're going to be talking about a lot of these stocks and this area and what's going on in the emerging markets. So be sure to tune in there. And if you want to check out all of our other podcasts, John and I did a really interesting podcast much earlier in the year about why there won't be a recession. You can check that one out. It's also on Apple Podcasts. And also what it would take to actually get us to 4% growth. We did that podcast and we're still waiting. We're still waiting, John. We're waiting for even 3%. I hope we get it. I hope we get the infrastructure plan soon. And then, you know, I hope we can get the tax reform to see if we can get up to that 3%. But if you want to know why we probably can't hold on to that 4%, you should tune into that podcast because it's kind of it's real eye-opening, I think, for everybody to listen to that one. So check that out on Apple Podcasts, and you can find them all on SoundCloud as well. And I'll see you again next time.